Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. Conor McGuckin is an assistant professor and psychologist working in the School of Education in Trinity College Dublin. Today, Conor speaks to me about bullying in schools, how the internet and mobile technology has led to cyberbullying and added a whole new dimension to bullying in our schools, whether banning of these technologies is the solution, and how the whole school community should be an integral part of creating policy documentation to deal with these issues. So, Professor McGuckin, thank you so much for joining us today. I wonder if you might start by telling me a little bit about your role in Trinity College Dublin.
Thanks for having me today, Aoife. By trade, I'm a psychologist. I'm not an educational psychologist. I'm a psychologist off or in education, and I'm interested in anything that's particularly non-curricular, so not maths, English per se. Interested in anything that can impact or affect the learning process and at the individual level, whether it's the pupil in the classroom, the parent at home, the teacher in the classroom, or the wider school community. And I'm based in the School of Education in Trinity College Dublin.
Brilliant. I know that from reading your work, you've done a lot of research into the area of bullying. Can you tell us, I suppose, what teachers really need to know about bullying? Because it is obviously a topic that is close to many teachers' hearts.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's quite often for a lot of adults and for a lot of teachers, it's one of those experiences that they've probably had firsthand experience of themselves, maybe as a victim or as a bystander. And it's these kind of things that can come back then, I suppose, to haunt us or traumatize us whenever we're adults and we're asked to deal with these situations and circumstances. And quite often the bullying can be insidious. Sometimes it can be very cloak and dagger, sometimes it can be a little bit hidden. And I think the main thing that I would advise teachers is to remember that, you know, there's a lot of support in the school if you're coming across these issues. There's a lot of support from more senior colleagues, from the policies in the schools, from your principal, and ultimately the National Action Plan on Bullying and a lot of the good work that's been done in DCU at the minute, in the National Anti-Bullying Unit. Quite often with the bullying, it's the big difference between the myths and the realities, and the old myths that girls particularly weren't aggressive and didn't get involved in bullying, and, you know, trying to counteract those and remember that, for example, girls do be aggressive and they do bully, but it's just by a different means than what boys do it by. And of course, then we've got all of the new developments that have happened since most of us were at school, the mobile phone, the internet, and the whole cyber aspect that, that we're encountering now. But I think the critical thing is for a teacher to encourage everyone to be supportive of each other, to have a friendship culture. And one of the biggest things that can protect someone from being bullied is the number of good friends they have. There's almost like a dose effect that the more good friends, the more protected you are. I think it's also important for teachers to realize that not all circumstances can be remedied by the same program or the same action or the same policy. And it's not maybe going to be resolved today or tomorrow. And the bullying and the victimization is something that's ongoing. It's there. It's always there. And I suppose it's really just to take your best effort at behavior management and to have confidence in trying your own strategies along with what you might have learned at college or what other colleagues might be doing. And just remember that, you know, there's three sides to every story. There's obviously his side, there's her side, and there's the truth somewhere in the middle. And it's just to be open to that and to encourage children, young people, to tell an appropriate adult, whether that's someone in the canteen, whether it's someone who's the caretaker, or it could be a teacher, could be anyone, but just to encourage them to open up. And if they do open up, the most important thing is to make them feel that they're being listened to and they're being heard.
Okay. And can you tell me, you mentioned there about, you know, the changes in mobile phones. Can you tell me, I suppose, the differences between a traditional bullying, a cyberbullying, and what's presenting in schools that you're seeing?
Yeah, traditionally, we would have seen bullying and understood bullying as that low-level aggression that happened within the school perimeter. So basically where the school fence was the extent of what the school's involvement could be. And that sort of self-contained it. And many things that happened, as we talk about offline, mm-hmm. they happened today, they happened in the playground. They might have happened on the way home from school. They might have happened in the local neighbourhood. But to all intents and purposes, it happened in school, because bullying happens when you have small groups of people who meet regularly and who meet often and have some kind of interaction between them every day. So that's why the school stuff really stayed within the school grounds. With the advent of the internet and mobile technology, increasingly that boundary has become so blurred and so confusing for children, and so confusing for teachers, adults as well, because no one really gets that handle on mm-hmm. where does it start, where does it stop. And now, for example, things that we talked about frequency and duration, they happen now much more readily. If there was a Snapchat post or an Instagram post that can be viewed repeatedly. So mm-hmm. a lot of the things that we used to define bullying as have changed mm-hmm. because, I suppose, of the temporal aspect of the communication. And now you can actually have people who have been victimized getting victimized over and over and over again, because they can go back and take a look at that message over and over again, or that picture that was taken off them over and over again. So it has moved now that it becomes a 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. It's in school, it's out of school, it's at home. And that takes a different type of response from the traditional bullying. Mm-hmm.
And you often hear, I suppose, lots of different ideas being thrown out about how to solve this, how to make it easier, how to protect our children. Do you think banning children from things like Facebook, is that the solution?
Absolutely not. Mm. Absolutely not. We have to take a very much of a children's rights action here. And there are so, so many good things about the internet, about mobile technology, and we shouldn't disallow children and young people to have access to that. For every single thing that we've had through the whole of history, the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, now the digital revolution, there's always been that knee-jerk reaction at the start that this is going to be horrible, this is going to be a panacea for issues, that we're not going to survive this. But we've always survived. And I think we survive because we come back to the very basics of humanity. Mm-hmm. We come back to the basics of the moral fabric of society. And if we can, we can come back to the individual, the role of the individual, the role of the family, the support within the family. Mm-hmm. I think too much at the minute we're always seeking for other people to sort these problems, that providers of Facebook and other social media platforms should sort all of these problems for us. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree that they have a huge part to play, mm-hmm. but banning children from any of these sites is not fair. It's mm-hmm. not equitable. What we should do is really instill within them at home, at school, and everywhere else, the coping mechanisms, mm-hmm. Coping mechanisms at the technological level of how to manage these things, but also at the personal level of not responding too quick. And, you know, in fact, to respond and not to react. So definitely banning children from these things doesn't work, won't work, won't ever work. Whatever we think the problem might be at the minute, it'll be replaced by a different platform very shortly. We're encouraging children to learn how to code very quickly. They'll all be able to code. They'll be able to code their own platforms. They'll go into the deep web. They'll be able to communicate mm-hmm. with each other in platforms that we can't even look at or manage. So there's no point trying to steer away from what the inevitable is. The future's here. Okay. It's going to get even more the way it is. So there's no point banning anything. it just doesn't work. We used to ban books because we didn't like the content of them. Mm-hmm. There's no point doing that with modernity. Let's grasp it. Let's take it. It's a fantastic thing for education, for lifelong learning. But we just need to give children and adults the coping skills.
Okay. And that, I suppose, leads me on to the next question. I can nearly imagine what your answer is going to be to this, but I suppose in the particularly over the last number of months, we've heard about schools banning mobile phones. Can I ask you what your views are to banning phones in school?
It just sounds a very blunt thing just to ban mobile phones, because most phones at the minute also act as a tablet as well. And sometimes we now have smartwatches, which are, to all intents and purposes, the same as a smartphone. So if we go to ban things outright, that will change within a few months and it'll continually change, and policy will never keep up. The law will never keep up. I think what we need to do is, again, not have a knee-jerk reaction. We're trying to have digital education, digital schools. I think we need to take a look very carefully at what we're doing there. I'm not in favour of the current policy approach of the government to yet again devolve down to schools. Mm-hmm. The need to come up with this policy and to have children, parents, teachers, the whole school community contributing to the policy, because I can't imagine there'd be any school where the vote will be so much one way or so much the other way. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to end up being a very close vote within mm-hmm. most schools as to whether we should have phones or not.
Yeah,
I'd leave it at a very local level for a very local solution in each school, with the school board, with the teaching staff, with the community, the parents. These things can be resolved and managed at a local level, depending on the school. Mm-hmm. Are they involved in digital school initiatives? Mm-hmm. Are they involved in Google Classroom? Do they need to have access to these things? So I think we need to be careful not to completely, again, go with no is the answer. Mm-hmm. But I think just leave it to the professionals that are teachers in the classroom, allow them to do their job, give them the support, and give the support to the school boards to engage with the community, rather than just, again, I think a knee-jerk reaction to something that is here, something that's going to stay, something that's very, very positive, very beneficial to all of us. And I'd like to see what most of us would look like if you took the mobile phone off us for all of the hours during the working day. So if it doesn't work for us, why do we think it's going to work for children and teenagers who aren't as resilient or who can't modify their behaviour as well as we should be able to do as adults? So if it's not going to work for us, it's not going to work for them.
And I think I remember hearing you speak at a conference before about, you know, how we approach changes. And you mentioned there about burning books. And I think you spoke about, you know, the Walkman and the horror that people had when the Walkman was brought out.
Yeah.
And that fear around that people would stop engaging and socializing. So I think it's probably quite similar here.
Yeah, that was a very real thing when the Sony Walkman came along, that there was this fear that people become so much more withdrawn into themselves, much more mental health issues, much more introverted. And we've survived the Walkman. We've probably survived to the stage that the, you know, retro, we're going to come back to the Walkman probably very shortly with the orange foam and that. But I keep coming back to the thing, you know, human society continues on. And I keep thinking about the cyberbullying and where we're going with that into artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. robotics. And I keep thinking, what's the best advice? And the best advice, I think, always is, what would your granny have said? And if your granny said it, she'd probably have been right. Mm-hmm. And it's most of the solutions to most things aren't rocket science. It's about having compassion. It's about being honest and open. But compassion without honesty, without compassion, can be cruel. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can just get back, and it's almost something I feel that as much as Ireland has become very liberal over the past number of years, it's become a very liberal very fast. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a bad thing now to almost have a conservative view on anything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the job of us as researchers and educators to entertain ideas from both sides. And as the old saying goes, you know, I may not agree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. And I think we don't talk anymore about the moral fabric of society. We don't talk about, you know, goodness in people and basic manners and things. But yet we talk about getting rid of religion in schools. Mm-hmm. We talk about, you know, now that we've had same-sex marriage, now that we've had the repeal, what's next to topple over in a liberal society? Oh, let's get rid of education in every school. Let's free up that half an hour in a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. So I think we just need to get back to basics, back to slow it down. We're dealing with children and young people. They don't grow or develop emotionally, psychologically, any faster than we did. They're growing and developing in a faster world that requires faster responses and more immediate responses because of social media and technology. But I think we need to be able to help them to slow down. Mm-hmm. And to do that, we need to slow down. We need to take stock of where we're at and the expectancies we have of adult relationships. And remember, you know, to pass this down to children. What would your granny have said? If those boys and girls aren't nice to play with, go and play with somebody else. Just the very basics. And I think unfortunately, especially with teenagers, I think a lot of parents have lost their way a little bit, that they're nearly afraid to parent rather than just being the friends of their teenage children. And I think sometimes they become afraid that if they say the wrong thing, that it opens up the mental health, suicide aspect of where we're at in society now. But I would encourage that with teachers, with educators, and I think this is what the heart of education is about, is education at the very basis of personal formation, individual formation. And I really hope that that's what we can do, because that's going to be the generation who look after me whenever I become older. So I just hope that they grow up with those basic things of integrity, confidence, self-esteem, skills, and education for what education is.
Absolutely. And I think that's great advice for student teachers as they go out there and as they prepare to deal with these issues. So I suppose, have you anything else that you would like to say to student teachers in particular who might be going out on teaching practice, who might be newly qualified teachers facing into this? And I think obviously qualified teachers who have numbers of years of experience and who are immersed in school culture and they have policies and they have programs, but it can be very nerve-wracking and daunting for student teachers to have to face, you know, coping with these issues in the classroom and talking to parents. And is there anything, I suppose, that you haven't said already that you would like to say to them?
Well, I'd say to every single one of you that I'm very, very jealous of you. I just don't have the capabilities and the skills to be in a classroom every day, to be working with children and young people, to see them grow, to see them develop. And, you know, the curriculum is one thing, and we'll get the curriculum done. It'll always get done. But I think the two words that are always there in terms of education are that ability every day to be creative and to be imaginative with curricular materials, with what you've got, with the pupils that you have in front of you. And the answer isn't always in a textbook. The answer isn't always in your head. But, you know, I think I'd say be really, really confident in being that big professional in Irish society that I think, again, Irish society has lost its way in rewarding and praising the work of teachers, of social workers, of nurses. Mm-hmm. It's almost that it's become okay every year to beat up teachers come Easter time because of the unions meeting at Easter, because of pay issues, because of summer holidays. And I think this is from a lot of parents who believe that they understand what happens in a school or a classroom just because they went to school when they were a child. And I would say, if you don't have the answer yourself, don't be using personal intuition. Put your hand up, say to one of your colleagues, I need help, I need support, I need advice. Take a look at curricular materials. Ask the principal, ask the vice principal, ask, you know, whoever's looking after that particular part of the curriculum in school. If it's about special education, ask for help, ask for support. The one thing I do say, and I always think, is you are there every day with children and young people who have got very malleable and very suggestible little minds. And what you do with them in a very short number of weeks will make the difference in their whole life. And you're doing that all the time. And that's a very rich, rewarding career. So I'd say switch off your mind from the negativity that's out there. Have a go. Even if you did a module at college, and if you did psychology and you got 52 or 58 or 62% for something, that doesn't mean don't ever try that in the classroom. Have a go.
Mm-hmm.
Have a lash. Try it. And, you know, if you don't try things, you're not doing anything. And if you are trying it, that's research.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're researching, is this going to be good? Is this going to be bad? And that's CPD.
Yeah.
CPD isn't always doing courses. Research isn't always about going off and doing a master's thesis.
Mm-hmm.
This is just about you being almost like the children in the classroom, being like Piaget's little scientists.
Yeah.
Have a go, see what works, what doesn't work, and have confidence. And I'd say by all means, have fun. Yeah. Children learn through fun, being treated like human beings, and being rewarded for the little things. And those little small words might mean the world of difference to a young person, because mm-hmm. you don't know what they're going home to. I mean, you might be that one safe, secure adult that they see every day. So I'd say have fun with the teaching, because I can't do it because I'm not a teacher and I'm just mad jealous of anyone that can do it.
I think as you were speaking there, a quote just came to my mind that I'd read before, and it was something like, you know, the best thing about teaching is that it matters, and the hardest thing about teaching is that it matters every day. You know, so that every day you are like influencing those little malleable minds, and that can have such a long term impact. But that's really good advice. Thank you. I know that you publish lots of books in relation to bullying and things like that, but I know you've had most recently two publications of two books. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about those books.
Well, the latest two books are both books about cyberbullying, and they bring together the best thinkers, the best researchers in the world on everything to do with bullying, cyberbullying, whether it's about how we define it or how we think about it, how we measure it, the links to health and well-being or self-esteem, intervention and prevention programs. So they're really nice, easy readers. And the one thing I'd say that's also good about them is that pretty much they're open access and they're freely available for people. And if anybody wants access to any of the works that are in them, most of them are on my personal website, or if they're not there, I'm by all means, if people contact me, I can give it to them or I can talk to them about it.
Do you want to tell us about what your website is?
The website is www.connormcgucken.com.
Brilliant. That's great.
And it's what I try to do with the research, and what I think we should all be trying to do, is to try not to use big words.
Mm-hmm.
And I always sort of think the litmus test would be if you were to meet my mother in the Harry Lemon pub in Dublin, and my mother doesn't drink, and she asked you what you were doing, could you explain to her in plain English, sentence by sentence, what it is you're writing about in your essay or what it is you're researching? Because if she can't understand it, how would anybody else understand it? And I think we need to take research from being very lofty and all about universities. And it's just about being inquisitive, trying to find out, trying something in your classroom. Did it work? Did it not work? So that's my philosophy with the research and the books, is to have them written, have them presented. Yes, as cutting edge research, the best of the best in the world, but also that they become very readable, very translatable, and very actionable by teachers. Because if they're not, and if what we're doing is not easily used by a teacher, then it begs the question of what are we doing?
Well, that's great. And I think the fact that it's available and we can share your website on the podcast as well, just so teachers are aware of that, because I think that would be really useful. So just tell me now, if I was to hand you a magic wand, Connor, and ask you, what are the three changes you'd like to make to education? What would they be?
Only three.
Only three.
Only three.
Not feeling generous today.
This is like Desert Island Discs. I can take Shakespeare and I can take the Bible and I can take three wishes with me. I think the first wish is that we move very, very swiftly and rapidly to much more personalized education, especially at university. We have great computing systems. We have great algorithms for everything in the world, from Facebook to, you know, online banking. We have to be at the stage where we can be much more personalized to the strengths and the interests of the learner. And I think we can bring that back the whole way down through into primary school as well. I think we can be much more responsive there mm-hmm. because everyone learns differently. Everyone has different strengths. We have different children with special educational needs. We can identify their requirements. But every pupil, whether they're at the other end of the spectrum or not, all have individual learning requirements. So I think if we can become more confident, and I think the confidence there is for every one of us from policy people right down, is to have more confidence in the quality of the teachers that we have in this country. We have fantastic teachers here. Most countries would be so jealous to see the caliber of what we have here, not just professionally, but also in terms of their interest in the well-being of the child mm-hmm. and the community. So if we trust teachers a little bit more, take the shackles off a little bit more, and allow these really well-researched, well-informed, highly educated teachers to be trusted to do that kind of thing, I think that's one thing that I would like to see.
I think people would be very happy to hear that.
It has to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think we can't be thinking about what does the child of 2050 look like, or what does mm-hmm. Ireland in 2050, I don't know what age I'll be, but, mm-hmm. you know, we are dealing with the next generation. And if we don't show them the way and the confidence that we should have, then we're missing out. I think another thing I would do is get rid of so much of the high stakes testing that we have in Ireland.
Like the standardized tests.
Not even so much the standardized tests. I think with the standardized tests, we're going to go quickly, like what America has done towards charter schools, towards league tables. That's never going to be good mm-hmm. because not everything that can be measured counts, and not everything Absolutely. That counts can be measured. And again, I think we should devolve down and trust teachers. And I think teachers should trust themselves that they can assess and evaluate their own students, and they shouldn't fear that. Mm-hmm. But I think Ireland's probably the only country in Western Europe that if there was a typo on the Leave and Cert exam, that it would be in the front of the national press tomorrow.
Yeah,
we've got to get away from that rote learning, the toughness, the anxiety-driven aspect of the teenage years. Teenage years are hard enough. Without adding, school should be fun. Education should be fun. I don't think we need to have as many subjects at Leaving Cert. Maybe a few less, a little bit more attention in them, a little bit more attention to helping people to feel. Or as Beckett would say, feel again, feel better.
Yeah, I love that.
And mm-hmm. have a growth mindset and trust people to feel. And learn how to think through things, because mm-hmm. when we get into other parts of life, we have to be able to do that. And I think if I was to have that third one, I think it would cut across pay conditions and support for the teaching profession in the country. Mm-hmm. Again, I sit on the board of one of the new community national schools, and I see, again, firsthand the practice of teachers. I see it in my work through teaching practice placements and everything else. We have a stunning, stunning young profession in this country. And if we don't step up to the mark as a society, it's probably one of the things this country will live to regret, mm-hmm. that we have allowed such a great education system to drift a little bit by not treating people well, but not giving them a psychological contract that they want to come to work, that they enjoy doing what they do, and that children are growing and developing. Not everything is about the curriculum, Aoife. It's about, I think it's one of the quotes I picked up from your research, children come to school with more than the bag in their back every day. Mm-hmm. And that's where we need to have some confidence. These are going to be the adults, the parents, the voters of tomorrow and the next day. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to, if I had that magic wand, allow teachers to be teachers, allow them to be what they are, and give them the support.
They're pretty good wishes there, Connor.
Well, I hope they're wishes, but I think we need to make these kind of things realities. Yes, we talk yeah. about them too much. The people get into their silos, and mm-hmm. the unions have a view, and other representative bodies have a view, and the department have a view, and mm-hmm. society has a view. And I think we just need to get back to basics. What is it that we want, and forget about all of the other bells and whistles? And I think we just need to stand stand up and stand up to society, I think, and argue the case as to what teachers do. And teachers do a huge amount more than just the curriculum. And I think parents know that because I think some parents treat schools as a child-minding service between 9 and 1:30, 2, 3 o'clock every day. Schools and teachers do an incredible amount that they don't get any praise or reward for.
I think you're right. Can you think back, had you a favourite teacher in school?
I didn't have a favourite teacher. I didn't particularly enjoy school. I sort of got through primary school and I absolutely did not have a good second level experience at school. Absolutely didn't. So no.
Okay.
In one word, no.
But in taking that experience, then what kind of characteristics would you like to see our student teachers come out of initial teacher education with? What do you think are those key skills?
I think the key skill is to be authentic, to be you, to be humble, to be accepting of the fact that you can influence the young people in front of you, but they can actually influence you. They can help you to grow and develop as an adult as well. So I think to be authentic, to be open, to be honest. I think the other thing is to be exactly what we expect the children to be. As I mentioned, like Piaget's little scientist, to explore, to try again, to feel, to not just be getting into the humdrum of things and maybe to, you know, encourage the school board to encourage a school that is, you know, thinking and responding and moving forward with the community. And I think there's a great opener now for young teachers coming out because we've lost a lot of the more experienced, the principals, the vice principals who have left teaching over the past number of years on packages and whatnot. So I think there's a lot of good opportunities there for people to get significant experience very early in their career. And I say, do it, grab it. And think about what kind of society you want, because that's what you have in your classroom every single day. And you have that opportunity to develop the people, as the little fridge magnet always says, be nice to your children because they'll pick your nursing home.
Very good. And so thank you so much. You've been such a good guest for this podcast. So just to finish, can you tell me what the heart of teaching means to you? If you could sum it up, what's teaching all about for you?
Oh, teaching's all about that love, passion, compassion, everything to do with children and loving them for who and what they are and the little empty vessels that are in front of us every day. And they're all coming in and they're all quirkily different and some are great at sport and some are great at something else. And it's that real opportunity in teaching to give them that love, that joy for play, for friendship, for being inquisitive, to learn, to not get upset if they get it wrong, to grow emotionally and socially. I think once we've got the play aspect, the social, the emotional, the educational stuff will come. It might not come this week or next week. It might come in a little bit down the line. We've got all resources and teaching methodologies to capture that. But I think the heart of teaching is about thinking about what do these young people need or want so that they can live a life that's full of reward and energy and enjoyment in whatever it is they choose to do after they leave your care. But I think the heart of teaching is just about that joy, that brilliance of having that very special relationship with a group of children as they grow and develop and soak up everything that you can show them, model them, teach them, help them with. And that will invariably lead to really good positivity in their lives. It'll be a great resource to fall back on in terms of mental health and well-being. And it'll be very good for them to be able to transmit to their friends and to their families and coping mechanisms and so many positive things. I think it's just that you're the driver and you have so many options there as to what you can do. I think again, all of this is outside of the curriculum. The curriculum's there, of course, mm-hmm. that has to be done, but there are so many different opportunities. I think that is the heart.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. I think you've certainly given us all a reminder of how privileged we are as teachers in the role that we play. So thanks a million, Connor.
Thank you, Aoife.